Hey, this is Leo for actualized.org. And in this episode, I'm going to be talking about grasping the illusory nature of thought. What is a thought exactly? What really is it? This is one of those kind of questions that everyone thinks that they know to the point where they don't even bother investigating it, or they take it as some sort of philosophical question that has no pertinent application to their everyday life. And nothing could be further from the truth. One of the most important questions you can ask in your life is this question of what is a thought? Because after all, you do think quite a bit. So if what you think a thought is not what a thought is, then wouldn't that be embarrassing? Wouldn't that be a source of potentially many problems in your life if you were somehow fundamentally mistaken about really the true nature of thoughts? After all, you're using thoughts to think about your life, and you're using thoughts to analyze reality, and you're using thoughts to grasp truth. And yet, you've never really bothered to grasp what thoughts are. You've always taken them for granted. Pretty much always. From day one, you've taken thoughts for granted. And yet, thoughts are a very odd, almost quasi-magical, mystical thing. Because they're not physical objects out in the physical world. They're happening inside your mind, so to speak. But what exactly are they? The nature of thoughts is illusory. And most people do not have awareness over what thoughts are. And this gets them into so much trouble. The difference between knowing what a thought is and not knowing what a thought is the difference between living in a self-constructed mental prison, a hellscape in which you suffer all the negative emotions that you suffer. All your anger, your sadness, your frustration, all the difficulties you have in relationships with money, with business, with your health, and all that stuff. Because all those problems are largely conceptually created. They're taking place in your mind. It's the difference between living in that kind of mental hellscape and the opposite of it, which is living in a sort of a freedom and getting to a self-actualized kind of life, which is what I'm here to help you to do. So if you want a self-actualized life, you should really concern yourself seriously with the question of what is a thought? And I don't mean just thinking about it in some philosophical manner, or reading what a thought is in a textbook, or looking up in a dictionary. I mean getting a experiential, direct awareness or consciousness or mindfulness over what thoughts are in your experience. Because it doesn't matter what you think thoughts are, it doesn't matter what you believe thoughts are, because actually, that's just more thinking. So see, you can't escape this problem by thinking about it more. What you gotta do is you gotta actually become aware of what thoughts are in your direct experience so that it's functioning for you, so that the knowledge is functioning in your life and it's making a difference. You see? And it's not just another belief. What does it mean to say that thoughts are illusory? Well, I'm not saying that thoughts are not real. A lot of people hear me talking about consciousness work or meditation or maybe some enlightenment topics. And I talk about thoughts and how thoughts are tricky and they're deceptive and they're illusory. And then say, oh, well, yeah, of course, yeah, thoughts aren't real then. But that's not what I'm saying at all. Thoughts are very real. Thoughts are as real as the car, the tree, the house, your body. But there's a wrinkle to it. See, thoughts are like chameleons. The problem with thoughts is that what they appear like on the surface is not what they actually are. Or rather, it's vice versa. Thoughts, as they appear, are exactly what they are, but you take them to mean a lot more than they really are. You attribute a certain depth to them that normally you shouldn't attribute to them. Not if you were fully aware. There's a great story that I like about Picasso. And Picasso, I don't know if you know anything about him, but basically he was a kind of a radical avant-garde cubist painter. And all of his paintings are not very realistic looking. In fact, it's hard to even see what the paintings are about sometimes. You could have a painting of a woman, and then you look at it, it doesn't even look like a woman. So this is kind of like abstract type of art. And one day, as the story goes, Picasso was traveling in a train, and he was just a passenger, and there was a man sitting near him in the cabin. And they're traveling together, and the man, he recognizes Picasso and says, "Oh, you're Picasso." And Picasso's like, "Yeah." And the man says, "Oh, you know, I don't like what you do. I don't like your work. You know, the art that you do isn't very good." And Picasso says, "What do you mean?" The man says, "Well, what I don't like about your work is that it's not realistic. Why do you go to all this length to paint these paintings which have nothing to do with life? They're not realistic at all." And Picasso looks at him kind of puzzled and says, "What do you mean they're not realistic? Show me an example of what you mean." And the man, he opens up his wallet and takes out a photograph of his wife. It's a little 2-inch by 2-inch little square black and white photograph of his wife. And he shows it to Picasso and says, "Here, look at this. Look, this right here, this is real. Why don't you paint stuff like this? That would be more useful than what you do." And Picasso, he looks at the photograph, he takes it in his hand, he kind of looks at it like this, brings it close to his face, he turns it to the side, kind of like looks at the back of the photograph. Then he tells the man, "You know, your wife, she's awfully small. And also, she's very flat." So that's just a great little anecdote that I like, which shows us the problem with images. Is that images have a certain, like, allure to them, and they're able to suck us in into their own reality without us being aware of what the image really, literally is. As in the case of a photograph, it's a piece of paper with some black ink on it. That's what it literally is. But what the man makes it out to be in his mind is his wife. Of course, the photograph is not literally his wife. But it's really easy to get lost in such minutia because the mind is very good at abstracting, and it tends to consider things that aren't really the thing it thinks it is as something that the mind imagines, because the mind likes to abstract stuff. There's a great painting, classic painting by René Magritte. He was a surrealist painter. Maybe you've seen this one. It's called The Treachery of Images. And what it is, and I'll show it to you right here, what it is it's just a very simple canvas with a picture of a pipe. And then it says, I believe in French, it says, "This is not a pipe." Kind of cool. I like that one. So what's the significance of all this? Well, I want to give you some analogies for the treachery of thoughts. So a photograph is not the thing depicted, right? Pretty obvious. I mean, this isn't rocket science. The problem is that we just tend to ignore it. We tend to ignore the significance of such a simple little distinction, that a photograph is not the thing depicted. Because here's the problem, is that if you think that a photograph is the thing depicted, for example, I can show you a photograph of a pizza, a delicious mouth-watering pizza, and if you actually believe and confuse the photograph for the real thing, then you might actually delude yourself into thinking that this photograph of a pizza will be able to ease your hunger. You might actually pack for a trip, let's say, to go mountain climbing, and you need to pack some food and supplies. And instead of packing actual food that's going to give you sustenance and allow you to live on that mountain for a week, what you do is you just pack a box full of photographs of food. Now, if you did that, that would be a fatal mistake. Now, of course, this is kind of a preposterous, exaggerated example, and you say, well, Leo, I don't really do that in my life. But I beg to differ. This is exactly what you do in your life. You're just not very aware of it yet, and I'm going to help you to draw this out in your experience. So, some more analogies. If I show you a three-dimensional drawing of an object, actually, that's not a three-dimensional object. It's a two-dimensional object represented in a three-dimensional way, which kind of creates a certain kind of illusion, which draws you in and makes you believe for a moment that it's actually three-dimensional. Pretty common example. Another great example is a book. Have you ever just taken a book and opened it up? And this is something I encourage you to actually go and do. Pause this recording and actually go do this after I tell you. Pick up a book and just kind of flip through it. And notice that all there is in this book is just black markings on white paper. That's literally what a book is. It's paper, many pages of it, with a cover, and black markings. The story that you think is in the book, like let's say this is a mystery novel, or a romance novel, or some sort of serious textbook on physics or mathematics, doesn't matter what the content is, that's what we're calling the story. There is actually no story in the book. The story is something your mind creates out of the black markings on the white pages. You see? And it's really useful to get that shift, actually get this shift directly in your experience. Because when you normally pick up a book, you're like, oh yeah, that's a sentence, that's a word. Immediately your mind, without even thinking about it, your mind starts to interpret these markings. The mind doesn't recognize that these are just markings because the mind says, well, yeah, of course they're markings. I know they're markings. Let's get beyond that. Let's see how these markings can actually be useful to me. And the use of the markings to me is that they tell me a story or give me some sort of information. So let me just go and jump straight into the information. Now, that's not a problem with books, but it becomes a problem when this analogy gets applied to your mental process. I'm just giving you analogies right now, and I'm going to tie it in with how this fits in with your life in a minute. Also, think about language. What is language? Language is just arbitrary sounds. Of course, your mind immediately interprets meaning and assigns that to the sounds, so the sounds sound like they're actually words and that the meaning in the words is inherent to the words. But if I spoke to you, for example, в русском языке я могу с тобой разговаривать и тебе говорить по-русски, но ты не будешь иметь никакой идеи, что эти звуки значат. Unless, of course, you speak Russian, and then you can understand and decipher what those sounds mean. Otherwise, those sounds are just gibberish to you. Total gibberish. That's what language is. It's just gibberish sounds. Which your mind then deconstructs and creates some kind of meaning out of it. So those are just some analogies. Now, how is this possible? How is it possible that meaning can be contained within just gibberish sounds or just markings on a piece of paper or pixels on a screen? The way it's possible is through symbols. And a symbol is a really fascinating thing. It's remarkable what a symbol is. Look at this. Look at the genius of what a symbol is. A symbol is a thing that represents something that it itself is not. Did you get that? Really think about this. A symbol is, by definition, not the thing that it represents. That's pretty freaky, if you think about that. Symbols are actually completely arbitrary. Anything can stand in as a symbol for anything else. For example, I can represent the moon with any symbol that I want. I can represent it with a refrigerator. I can represent your mom with a fish. I can represent the money in your bank account with 5 chicken eggs. I can represent your entire life story with a can of Coca-Cola. You know, like, there is no limit to what the symbol can be. A lot of times we think like, well, the symbol sort of has to resemble the original thing. And no, it actually doesn't. Not at all. In fact, most of the symbols we use, most of the English language, both spoken and written, has nothing to do with the meanings. When I say the word cat, that has nothing at all to do. It has no resemblance whatsoever to the actual animal cat. You ever notice that? Kind of funny. It's just like totally arbitrary, right? Totally arbitrary. And yet our mind is able to decipher it. Because all that's necessary in our mind is just a mapping. The mapping in the mind is just like, well, cat equals the actual animal cat. That's all that's necessary. And you can change all those meanings around if you wanted to. You can teach yourself new languages, or you can even reinterpret what an existing language means, right? Now, all this might seem kind of obvious, but also just notice how unconscious this makes you. Because you're born into this world, and just after a couple of years already, you're just taught language. You're taught language, your mind is primed for learning language. And then this language is what you use to think with. So your thoughts are arbitrary symbols, and you think in language, you also think in images, but largely your thoughts are just kind of arbitrary symbols which acquire meaning over time. And what the human brain is a magnificent mechanism for shuffling around all these symbols and then creating all sorts of meanings and interconnections between these symbols. And then see what happens after a while, after you do this for 10, 20, 30 years, what happens is that you start to create all sorts of weird, twisted meanings in your mind, where something can happen in reality, and then it can make you feel depressed, or it can make you feel angry or pissed off. It can make you cry. It can make you yell. It can make you fuming, mad, full of rage. It can make you kill somebody because of the meanings that your mind assigns to certain symbols. It's really quite remarkable that this is even possible. It's amazing that symbols even exist. But you have to also start to become conscious that meaning, what it is because it is arbitrary, it's completely arbitrary, that meaning is an illusion. And meanings are some of the most meaningful things to you. What's the meaning of money to you? What's the meaning of a relationship to you? What's the meaning of love to you? What's the meaning of sex to you? What's the meaning of your car to you, or your house, or your career, or your job, or how people think of you, whether they think of you as a good person or an evil person? All of these things are meanings that are spun by the mind. But also, you're not aware of what they literally are, because a thought has two components to it, so to speak. There's the content of the thought, or the story that's contained in it, the meaning, in other words, and then there's literally what it is. So if you ever get to the point in your life where you're feeling bad and depressed, or you're having some kind of negative emotional reaction, you're suffering, one thing that might dawn on you, if you are conscious enough, is that all of these meanings are not actually true. How can this be the case? I'm going to show you with some practical examples, and I'll give you some exercises here. But just recognize now the significance of this. Breaking free from your mind requires that you become aware of what meaning is and its illusory nature. Gaining mindfulness over your thoughts. This is one of the keys to all self-improvement work. The more mindful you are of your thoughts, the less reactive and the less distressed you will be by them. Because distress and suffering is only contained within meaning. There cannot really be any suffering without meaning. You might think there can be, like, you might think that there could be extreme pain and stuff like this, but that's not really the case. Almost all of your suffering comes from meaning. And yet, at the same time, meaning is illusory. So you're seeing the significance of this. Extremely significant. This is not philosophy. This is not just some, like, interesting linguistic theory that I'm giving to you. Very practical. I want to teach you a little technique that I kind of came up with myself. I call it flattening the illusion. And I want to train you how to use this technique. So first, we're going to train on just some very simple examples that aren't very applicable to your life. So the first example I'm going to show on the screen right now, go ahead and take a look at it. So you see a picture. Now what I want you to do is I want you to flatten the illusion, as I say. Flatten the illusion. So notice the meaning that's there and notice whatever your mind is kind of projecting and perceiving of the image. And now what I want you to do is I want you to just flatten it. Look at it literally. What is it literally? So literally, it is not a three-dimensional cube. Literally, it's some flat markings on a flat surface. Of course, you could go even more literal. You could say, well, they're just pixels on a computer screen that you're looking at. That would be an additional level of literalness. But we can even just kind of ignore that and just pretend like you're looking at it on a piece of paper or something. But look at this literally, right? It's just some flat markings on a flat surface. There's nothing three-dimensional about it, even though it appears three-dimensional. So we might say that the content appears three-dimensional. That's the illusory nature of it. The reality of it, literally, is that it's just some two-dimensional ink on a surface. Okay, good. Now let's go on to the next example. So take a look at this example. This one might be a little more tricky for you, especially if you have a phobia on this issue. So take a look at this, and now immediately notice if you have any kind of emotional reactions in your body or in your mind. And what I want you to do is, I want you to flatten the illusion. So make a distinction between what's literally there on the screen that you're looking at and what your mind is projecting onto it, what it's interpreting out of it. This might mean any labels you assign to this object, if you assign any labels to it, or any kind of memories that come up, or any kind of associations, any kind of charged emotional reactions you might have, any kind of feelings of disgust or fear or avoidance. Notice all of that is separate from what's literally there. So flatten the illusion right now. Practice this. Actually do it. Okay, so you're seeing what's literally there and not the content of the picture. Notice that the content is an illusion. Okay, good. Now let's go on to the last example of this series. So take a look at this. Now, immediately what I want you to do is to notice the difference between the content and what's literally there. So flatten this illusion. Notice any kind of emotional reactions you might have had to the words written on the screen and how maybe you perceived it in some kind of a charged emotional way. Maybe you related to it in some way that offended you or made you feel bad or shocked you or whatever. Notice that that's all your stuff. That's not what's happening on the screen. And also notice that the words and symbols written on the screen, notice what those are. The meaning of those is, again, projected and interpreted by your mind. So flatten the illusion of the words on the screen to the point where you don't even see them as words anymore, but just as symbols on the screen. See the words and the letters for what they literally are, not for what your mind thinks they mean. Okay, so flatten that illusion. Okay, great. So now you got the hang of it, right? Pretty simple. Now, the trick, though, is to actually get good at flattening the illusion with your thoughts. Because your thoughts are just like words on a screen or images on a screen. The problem is that you're not very aware of thoughts. And it takes practice to actually develop mindfulness to the point where you don't get sucked in and reactive to the thoughts that you're having. In order to flatten something, what I mean by flattening the illusion, basically you just ask yourself the question, what is this thing actually? What is it literally? It's a literal way of looking at the world without any abstraction or projection or any kind of vagueness. It's just whatever's there is exactly what's there, and I'm not going to assume anything about it. I'm not going to extrapolate any meaning out of it. I'm not going to relate the thing that's there to me in any way. I'm just going to see what's literally there. So let's try some more real-world examples with your thoughts now. Flatten the following illusions. Think of your mother. Get a thought of your mother, whatever it is. Might be an image in your mind or a story, a memory. Whatever comes up for you is fine. Not very important, the details. So think of your mother and now flatten that illusion. Can you do it? Actually do it. So that you resolve the thought and you break down its content and the thought loses its content and you can just experience the thought as a, you might say, just a sensation in your mind. Because that's what a thought literally is. A thought is real in the sense that it has a certain feeling or a sensation to it. Like if you have an image of your mom's face, that's real. But it's not your mom's face. You see? In the same way that if I write a word like cat, the word cat is real, but it's not a cat. This takes practice, so let's do another one. Think of gravity. Whatever idea or concept you have of gravity, bring it up to mind. Now, if I ask you, is gravity real? You would say, yes, it is. Of course it is. But now what I want you to do is just take this concept of gravity and flatten the illusion. What is gravity actually? You might say, well, gravity is a force in real life. No. What is actually the thought of gravity? Flatten that illusion. Notice what gravity literally is in your mind. Gravity is not a force in the physical world. Gravity is a concept in your mind. Now flatten that. And see that. Go from thinking of gravity as a real force in the real world into seeing it as a sensation in your mind. Because that is what literally gravity is. It's a sensation in your mind. And I don't mean the sensation of the weight of your body. I mean the sensation of your idea of gravity. Because gravity is an idea. That's literally what it is. Okay? Now, we'll try something a little trickier. Bring to mind your idea of the external world. So think about the external world, the fact that there is an external world that exists. So if you close your eyes, you think there's an external world, right? You don't think the world disappears, do you? Probably not. So bring to mind the external world. Now, normally people would say, well, the external world is a real thing. It's the most real thing there is. But take a look at what the external world literally is. Flatten that illusion. The external world is not an external world. The external world is a thought in your mind. It's a sensation in your mind that you experience. So notice it for what it literally is. Got it? Good. Let's move on to the next one. Think of God. Whether you do believe in God or don't believe in God, doesn't matter. Just bring to mind the idea of God or whatever you think God is. Okay. Now, flatten the illusion of God. Notice what God literally is. Notice that you might have a resistance to flattening the illusion of God. You may not want to see God as what God literally is, because you've been telling yourself part of the illusion of God is that, no, God is real, God is out there. God's not in my head. God's not an idea. That one might be tricky for you. If you're an atheist, that's a really easy one for you, because you already believe that God is an idea. But that's a whole can of worms I'm not going to go into here. Okay? And now what I want you to do, and this is the trickiest one of all, be real careful about this one. Think of yourself. You. Not just the thought of you, but literally you. Who are you? What are you? Think of yourself. The most truest sense of yourself that you have. Bring that to mind. Okay, got it? Now flatten the illusion of yourself. Yeah, that's a tricky one. You might have some resistance to doing that one. That one's even harder to do than God. Because you do think you're yourself. And part of the illusion of being yourself is thinking that you're not an idea, but that you're really yourself. You're real. But what is yourself? Really, literally. Look at this very objectively. Don't let your mind bullshit you. Flatten the illusion of yourself. Okay, got it? Good. Now, that one might take you some more practice to really get down. It's a really tricky, tricky one. So anyways, these are all exercises that force your mind to see reality literally and to deconstruct your thoughts into what they literally are versus seeing the story, the content, or the image of the thoughts. I really like to draw the analogy between what we're doing here and what artists are taught to do when they learn to draw. So a good artist, and if you go to an art class, what they'll teach you if you want to become a good drawer is they'll sit you down, there's going to be like a still life, like there's going to be maybe a flower pot with a vase and maybe a bowl of fruit, and it's going to be nicely lit, and you're going to be sitting there with the whole class, you're going to be drawing this thing, they're going to ask you to draw that as accurately as you can, just with a pencil and a piece of paper, you know, very simple. And the instruction that they'll give you to make you a good drawer is they'll tell you, draw not what you think is there, but literally what you see. And that's kind of what we're telling you to do here. Don't think abstractly about what God is or what your mom is or what gravity is or what you are, but literally just become mindful of what exactly is happening in your experience in order to even render the story of God, gravity, external world, yourself, or your mom. See? And a good artist, at first, is very difficult because you might think that when you're drawing something, it's like, well, yeah, I already know what's there. But what you quickly realize if you go to one of these classes is like, no, you don't know. What you're drawing is you're kind of drawing your idea, your image, your abstract fantasy of what's there. When you literally draw what's there, it's a totally different experience. Even though the thing you're looking at didn't really change. It's the same thing with becoming more mindful of your thoughts. So this entire episode, what I'm talking about is how to become more mindful of your thoughts. And hopefully this is starting to show you the power of mindfulness. Now, mindfulness doesn't just apply to thoughts. You can apply mindfulness to feelings, sensations, emotions, all sorts of stuff. sights and sounds, but the most important thing that you can apply mindfulness to is your thoughts, because your thoughts construct all the meanings in your life. What would your life be without meaning? It would be unrecognizable to you. And all the problems you have in your life, what do you think those are? Those come from meaning. Without meaning, there cannot be a problem. Do you understand this? A problem is a meaning. It's a specific type of meaning that you assign to a specific type of situation. And then you tell yourself, well, the meaning is baked into the situation. You know, I'm angry because that person did something to me. Or I'm afraid because I really don't have enough money in my bank account to pay my mortgage next month. You tell yourself that, but that's just more layers of meaning. You see, it's like meaning, masking, meaning, masking, meaning, masking, meaning. That's what's so dangerous about thoughts. With a picture, it's really simple to see that a photograph of a piece of pizza is not going to feed your hunger. That's easy enough to see. But with thoughts, you can't see this because the thoughts just come one on top of the next, on top of the next, on top of the next. And you just believe every single thought that comes without questioning them, without looking at them very carefully. And so pretty quickly, you're overrun by thoughts and you're just lost in the middle of a vast ocean of thoughts. And then you start to drown and you really believe, because you're surrounded completely by thoughts, that your reality becomes thoughts. You live in an augmented reality. And then from this, many of your problems in life come. If you're shy, the only reason you're shy is because of thoughts. Thoughts make you shy. The real world doesn't make you shy. It doesn't make anybody shy. If you're afraid of something, the only reason you're afraid of something is because you're lost in a sea of thoughts. The real world, rarely, like if a lion jumps out at you from the middle of nowhere, yeah, you're going to have some kind of like really low-level reptilian brain response to that. So from there, you can have kind of a chemical fear. But most of your fears are not like that. Most of your fears are these higher order fears that are coming from conceptual interpretations of reality. Same thing with anger and depression and frustration and annoyance and every other emotion you don't like. And similarly with the positive emotions. A lot of those are stemming from the meanings that you assign to objects and situations in the world. So can you see the potential power of gaining mastery over the way in which you assign meaning to things? Very powerful. The trick is that it requires practice. This is not something you just kind of like watch a video about it or listen to me talk about it for an hour or so. And it's like, yep, I got it, Leo. And now I can go and apply it. And now I don't have any more fears or anger, or any depression or anything like that. It's not going to work that quickly for you because you've got so many meanings. You've got this giant web of meanings wrapped in another web of meanings, wrapped in another web of meanings, that you're just totally lost. You're totally lost. And it's going to take you practice to unravel this web of meanings that you've created. But can you see the potential value of making this investment in practicing and learning how to do this? You might not immediately resolve all your problems, but can you see that over time, if you spend a few months or a few years practicing this, that over time you're going to develop the mental facility or ability to kind of become the master of your own mind and your own meanings? And you can become extremely good at this. You can become so good at this that literally you can melt problems away. Just completely dissolve them. But that'll take some doing. So how do you do this? How do you practice this? Well, let me give you an assignment. What I want you to do over the next week, if you accept this challenge, is I want you to commit to the following. I want you to flatten 50 illusions that actually occur in your everyday experience. So regular stuff, not just made up examples, kind of like what I made up here, but real stuff. 50 illusions over the next week. And by illusions, I mean thoughts. Thoughts that you have. You're going to flatten 50 of them. And each one you're going to write down carefully and accurately in a journal. So let me give you three examples of how this might work. So let's say tomorrow I go to work and something happens at work and I really hate my boss. So I really feel like, oh, I hate my boss. He's such an asshole. Okay, good. So number one, so I write this in my journal. Number one, I hate my boss. That's what came up as a thought. I noticed it. Okay, I wrote that down. Now what I want you to do is to break that down into two components. One component is the content, and the other component is what it literally is. So I hate my boss. What's the content of that? Well, the content of that is the meaning I assign to it. So something like, my boss is a complete idiot, and I wish he was fired. Like, that's the content. That's the story. But what is it literally? Literally, in your mind as it's happening, what is it? So there you might write down something like, image of boss with a stupid face, image of boss getting fired, feeling in my chest of contraction and heating, because that's the emotional component, right? So a charged thought is not just a mental image, but it's also like probably a constriction in your body somewhere, some kind of tension. So write that down as well. That's literally what that is. So that's an example of flattening the illusion. Now, let's give you a second example. Let's say that you're going about your day and you're in a crowd of people and all of a sudden you feel shy and insecure. What's the content of that? So you write that down. Number two, I am shy. Let's say that that's your thought. What's the content there? The content there is that it's something like, well, I'm always insecure in groups. You know, I really feel bad about being shy all the time. I wish I wasn't shy. That's the content. What is it literally? Literally, it might be something like butterflies in your stomach. Feeling the pumping of your blood through your veins and your arms and in your neck. And it might also be a kind of a feeling of sadness and depression. And an image of you being weak and awkward looking and everybody laughing at you. You know, maybe you have that kind of image in your mind. And also the sound of, I am shy, or why am I so shy? Why was I born this way? That might be literally what this thing is. Okay, got that? And then the third example is something like, let's say you're going about your day and you have this idea of like, oh, you know, I'm listening to all these actualize.org videos and I really have a plan for my life. I'm going to be rich. I really want to be rich. I have this goal of becoming rich. I want to be a millionaire and I want to drive around in a BMW. Okay, so you write that down. Number three in your journal, I am going to be rich. Write that down. That's your thought. And now what's the content of that? The content is something like, I'm going to have $1 million and drive around in a BMW. Okay. And what's literally going on there in that thought? Well, you probably have an image of you with a big stack of dollar bills, or maybe it's in a briefcase, or maybe you're picturing digits in your bank account, like 7 digits in your bank account. And also you're picturing yourself driving down the coast of California in a BMW, and it's kind of like silver colored or red colored, whatever color you want. And also you've got this kind of like positive, light, bubbly feeling somewhere in your chest. Kind of, that's kind of like the happiness component, because this is a goal of yours, so it probably makes you happy to picture yourself this way. So that's literally what this thing is. Notice that there's a big difference between what it literally is and the content that you attribute to it, the meaning of it. Big difference. So those are three examples. I want you to come up with 50 of these from your real life over the next week. This will take some commitment from you because you'll easily forget. So make sure that if you want to do this, you really commit to it and maybe set a reminder for yourself so that you're not forgetting every single morning that you wake up that this is what you're doing. And keep your journal with you throughout the day and write this stuff down. Take it to work or to school, wherever you go. I guarantee that if you do this 50 times over the next week, you're going to have some pretty interesting insights. And already this giant condensed web of beliefs you have and all these meanings about how bad your life is and how you can't do this and how you feel deficient in this area, it's going to start to unravel. Not totally. But you're going to start to see the potential of this. And hopefully what it'll do is it'll just kind of get you to buy into the idea that mindfulness is important and that understanding what thoughts are is important. And maybe it'll show you how poor your mindfulness skills are. Maybe it'll demonstrate to you that, man, you know, I thought I knew what was going on in my mind, but really I have no freaking clue what's going on in my mind. I'm not even sure what a thought is. What is a thought? Do this exercise 50 times, and you'll just get to the point where you'll be like, oh my God, I can't believe I don't even know what a thought is. And that's true. You don't know what a thought is. And doing 50 of these examples is not going to reveal to you what a thought is. That's going to take many hundreds of hours more of work. But remember how powerful this is. This is one of the keys to all personal development. This is one of the keys to unlocking your entire mind. So don't treat this casually. Don't expect this to come easy and effortlessly for you. You're going to struggle a lot with this, but also remember that you're shooting for something big here. If you actually do ever become fully mindful of what a thought is, that will be huge for you. Huge. That will be more valuable to you than all the self-help books you could read in 5 years. But it can't be a belief. It can't be an idea. It can't be a theory of yours. It can't be an ideology. You can't turn it into a dogma. You have to actually practice. This is a skill. This is a skill no different than hitting a golf ball well or doing a good tennis serve or, skiing excellently down a mountain without falling down. These are all like physical skills. And so is the awareness of your mind and of your thought process. You could think of it almost like a physical skill, like playing the piano. And right now, you're a horrible pianist. Therein lies one of your biggest problems in life. The problem is that you have thoughts that tell you that you're an excellent pianist and that you don't need to learn how to play the piano because you're just a natural at it. You were born good. You were born knowing how to think. So naturally, you should know what thoughts are. But this is a very dangerous thought to have. And maybe one day you can become mindful of the fact that you have that thought. And then you can flatten it and see what it really is. Yeah. See that? And if you want to take this to deeper levels, read up on mindfulness. I have some powerful videos and additional episodes that talk about mindfulness meditation, how to practice it, how to set up a habit of developing a little bit more mindfulness every single day. You can also try different forms of meditation that can build up mindfulness. You can also watch some of my other episodes that go into depth into revealing the illusory nature of your mind and how your mind really works. You know, I talk about what emotions are and how they work. I talk about what thoughts are and how they work, and many, many other things like this. So this is a whole field for you, right? This is just the beginning. This is just the opening of a little door that leads to a very vast new universe, which ultimately leads to freedom and to a self-actualized life. All right, that's it. I'm done. I'm signing off. Please click the like button for me. Post your comments down below. Share this with a friend if you would. And lastly, come check out actualize.org. This is my website. I have a free newsletter on there. I'd like you to sign up because if you do sign up, then you're going to get kind of like weekly reminders with new content, new videos that I'm releasing all the time, which are just going to take you deeper and deeper into realizing and mastering your mind. Because as you develop and master your mind in ways that you have not been taught in school, in ways that your parents have no clue about, your friends have no clue about, the general popular culture has no clue about, nobody will teach you this stuff, really. So it's really worth it to stick with me. If you want to master your life, you want to create the kind of life that you've dreamed of having, and you know you've struggled and you didn't know how to do it, well, the reason you didn't is because you haven't mastered your mind yet. And what I'm going to show you is how to master your mind to the deepest depths possible. I'm going to take you so deep on this that you probably don't even want to go that deep. But man, if you stick around me for few months, a few years, you're going to start to see huge changes in your perspective on life and what you think is possible in life. And you're going to be able to accomplish many of the things that previously you thought you never could. So sign up to the newsletter, stay tuned, and I'll see you soon with more.